League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to the Point Forward Podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
Hello, everybody. The Point Forward Podcast is back with you. First time, second time since the season has ended. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and I am joined by my colleagues, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel luminaries, Ben Steele and Jim Ozarski. We are here to talk a little about the Milwaukee Bucks, about their draft, about what they might do with the 23rd pick in the first round or the 33rd pick in the second round for that matter. We're going to talk a little about Marquette guys. There's a couple names that people know, Ozo Iguodaro and Tyler Kolek, who could be available in that first round spot where the Bucks are picking. So Ben is here. Ben brings his Marquette and his Bucks expertise to the table. But Jim, I have to start with you because you wrote at jsonline.com, and honestly, it's just really complicated what the Bucks are facing and all the different machinations that they're up against as far as the salary cap and what can be expected for the offseason. And it's a really big meaty conversation, but even just keeping it to the draft is tricky because, like, I am not personally clear on if they expect to keep the 23rd player, the player that they draft, if that's going to happen or if it's definitely an asset that they're going to trade. It's very confusing to me. You know, it seems like they might keep a player, but I have no idea. So what do you, just from that standpoint, do you think the Milwaukee Bucks will have one or two new players at the end of next week? Or do you think these are purely assets and nobody should get in? You shouldn't even read the mock drafts because it's pretty likely the Bucks aren't going to keep any of these players.
There's a part of me that looks at precedent, and that precedent would be Marjan Beauchamp being selected at 24. There was obviously thought, could the Bucks move that? But they don't really have a whole lot of picks. I believe they don't have one next year. There's swaps involved. So if there's the idea of we need young players who are under contract for the next 5 years, I could totally see John Horst and his staff saying, hey, this is a player we can pick, we can develop, and in 3 years, you know, maybe is some kind of rotation player. That would make all the sense in the world. The second round pick, look, I mean, that's sort of what Andre Jackson was last year. And second round picks have gained some traction as capital of late. Obviously, the Bucks had moved all of theirs for various veterans over the years. They got this one back in the Lillard trade. Actually, that one I can see as being sort of a sweetener, you know, as we're going to move one of the veterans under contract. So here's this second round pick to go out with it. So I could see both, right? Like and even with the first round pick being a sweetener of such. Ben, you know, knows the college game very well. This is not a draft where, you know, what's the difference between 23 and 33? What's the difference between 18 and 23? That could either be good or bad for the Bucks, depending what they want to do or whom they want to trade with or for, JR. So, yeah, I think it either could be really exciting draft night or a very boring one. I will say that sort of the third option here for Bucks fans to consider, just because the Bucks make the picks, let's say they pick at 23, they pick at 33, and there are no trades on draft day. As long as the Bucks don't sign those picks, they can still be attached to a veteran trade the first week of July, the second week of July, because they're not technically signed players. Therefore, they are not an aggregated salary. So, yeah, like, let's say they pick, let's just say Tyler Kolek, since Ben's here. Tyler Kolek is drafted at number 23. We go through the whole thing. And then on July 14th, the draft rights to Tyler Kolek and Pat Connaughton are sent off to the ether, right? And it won't count as an aggregated salary because he had not signed his deal. So there's the third loop in there, JR, for people to sort of consider, I guess, as the draft happens and then moves on.
So it feels like to me they'd have to have a deal in place in advance of that, because you're not going to draft Tyler Kolek just because now the asset isn't the 23rd pick. It's got a name attached to it. So
exactly.
Any team that wants to trade for a veteran is going to want that specific player. Man, Ben, tell me about this draft. Like, what is the difference between the 18th and the 23rd pick, that scenario that Jim mentioned? I mean, it sounds like, honestly, this sounds like maybe the worst draft of our lifetimes. Like, that's kind of how it's being portrayed. So how do you look at it? Like, are the Bucks fortunate to be 23rd? Because, hey, they could also be number 10 and it wouldn't matter because we're talking about the same level of player.
Yeah, honestly, there might not be a difference between like 12 and 58 whenever the last team picks, you know, because two teams forfeited their draft picks. But, you know, people have said this is the worst draft since 2013. But I would say for the Bucks, they got Giannis in that draft at number 15, right, when no one was expecting that. There's always players that emerge in any draft. This draft might not have like the top level stars, like the Zions, you know, Anthony Davises that most drafts have at the top of the draft. But there's going to be players available in this draft, and you know, it's up to your scouting departments to dig through all this morass and find those diamonds in the rough.
Yeah, if they could get another Giannis, that would be spectacular. They should absolutely do that, whatever it takes to get another Giannis. So Jim, I just one of the names that keeps bubbling up here as we talk about this stuff is Brook Lopez. You know, Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer, who's one of my favorite guys. I've brought him up before, but you know, he talked about how that could be a really interesting maneuver for the Bucks if they decide to change the way they look defensively. Obviously, Brook Lopez is getting up there. And if they decided to move him, the gymnastics that would be required to make that happen, as you kind of laid out, like it can't be multiple players for one player, or they're going to end up getting hard capped, which is going to completely limit what they can do going forward. So you've got to find a team that would be willing to take him and also be willing to kind of work with the way the money works. I don't even have a good handle on how this would work, but let's say the Bucks decided we are ready to move on from Brook Lopez. What comes next? How do they use the draft to make that happen or not happen? What are the roadblocks? What comes next if that's what their decision is?
First of all, how ironic would that be if they move Brook Lopez to run a more varied defensive scheme when Adrian Griffin, they thought that's what he was going to do, and then they re-signed Brook Lopez, and then they tried to do that, and then the guys didn't want to do it. And
mistakes
then
were made.
That's a whole other thing. Adrian's, if that happens, Adrian's got to be sitting wherever he's sitting, being like, but anyway, to make this simple, okay, you mentioned The Ringer. The reason he brings that up is Bruce Brown makes $23 million on this team option with the Raptors. Bruce Brown is that 28-year-old wing defender, championship pedigree. The Bucks could literally trade Brook Lopez for Bruce Brown, one for one, easy peasy. Like, if the salaries match, the dollar for dollar matches, there's no aggregation on the Bucks side. I'm guessing the Raptors would want a sweetener. I just don't think they're ever one for ones. Like, I feel there's always some sort of like string attached. That's easy. A harder one, let's say the Cavaliers hire Kenny Atkinson as their head coach. Kenny Atkinson says, hey, I want Brook Lopez. I want a stretch five to play with Evan Mobley. Jared Allen, hey, let's make that happen. Jared Allen makes $3 million less money. Oh, that on paper, that seems easy. But again, Jared Allen is younger. One more year on his deal. Burgeoning all-star. They're going to say, no, we want a little sweetener, so there's your picks. Oh, wait a minute. The Cavs are a luxury tax team. Now you have to consider, it's not just moving, oh, Bucks money or Bucks players. It's the constraints of the other teams. $3 million may not seem like a lot, but in Cleveland, when you're looking to sign Evan Mobley to a max extension, rookie extension, you're looking to sign Donovan Mitchell to an extension, the Brook Lopez $3 million this year, that's could be a problem for them, as they don't want to stay in this tax for years and years when those extensions kick in, guys. So that means, do they have to ship off Dean Wade to some third team? So, you know, the dollar for dollar, one for one is possible. It would be really clean and easy for everybody. But once you get beyond that, it's difficult. And I mentioned Bruce Brown. They traded Drew Holiday because they got Damian Lillard, right? Like, they're not just going to move Brooke or move Chris just because. Like, you have to tell me who it is that's coming back that's either an All-NBA, All-Star, All-Defensive Team, in their prime, can help them win in 24, 25. Bruce Brown might check that box as like an elite defender just away from the rim. And then maybe to Ben, you know, Ben, I don't think Zach Edey and Klingon will be there at 23.
No.
Where are you looking for maybe that rim protector? Because Giannis isn't going to do that for 82 plus. Right. So, like, there's gotta be, it's not just as simple as moving one for ones or one in a pick, JR and Ben, right? Like, these guys, there's so much more into what the Bucks have to do to try to win a title next year than just, you know, these trade machine transactions.
You said where, you didn't mean Khalil Ware, the 20-year-old from Indiana. But that was a pretty good segue, I might say. Because, Ben, I want to know the players. I want to know the names of the guys that might be available here who could help the Bucks. Now, Zach Edey is a name that I think early on was seen as somebody in that lower 20s position, mid to lower 20s. But teams have either talked themselves into him or evaluators have, mock draft makers have, I don't know. But it seems like Jim just said, he won't be there. So not even maybe worth talking about how he'd fit. There are a lot of guys out there that I don't think the average Bucks fan has heard of. There's a couple names that might be all right. But as you've looked at this draft, knowing that the Bucks probably want to get a big man, like every team wants to get a big man, I guess that'd be a good place to start. But who are the maybe three or four names that you've looked at as thinking that's a good fit and they might be available at 23?
Yeah, you mentioned Khalil Ware, so we could start with him. Played at Indiana, played at Oregon his first year. Very versatile big man, as most of these modern guys are, can shoot it a little bit, block shots. The question with him has always been his motor, even going back to when he was recruited in high school. So that raises an automatic red flag there. That these are the kind of flawed prospects that we're dealing with this far down in the first round. One guy that's pretty intriguing to me is Yves Missi from Baylor. I think I've seen his name kind of been connected with the Bucks a little bit on a few mock drafts that I've seen. Super athletic, rim running guy, lob catcher. Not quite in the Brook Lopez size mold. Moves a little bit better than him, but he still offers some rim protection that Brook Lopez gives. Those are two guys that I'm kind of intrigued by. If you want to go to the guard route, you know, Tyler Kolek, we'll talk about him shortly. Some other guys, Kyshawn George from Miami, I've seen his name floating around in the 20s, but he is super young. He's still super raw. A lot with the guard prospects, you're going to get like a raw guy in the 20s. So I don't know if the Bucks want to go that route because it seems like they're going to want a guy that can plug and play right away with their championship window kind of closing a little bit in these next couple seasons. So I would go the big guy route. Yves Missi is probably the guy I would choose at that spot just because of his huge upside. And I think he can still play with his athletic skills right away.
Yeah, this draft is so bad, guys. I mean, like you talked about.
Well, JR, real quick. I mean, to Ben's point, Missi. So we're talking about trading Lopez and maybe drafting it. And Ben mentioned a rim runner. That's important to note because the reason Brooke fits so well was you needed a big who could shoot threes alongside Giannis. Now you have Damian Lillard, and Lillard changes the geometry of the floor. You don't necessarily need a floor spacing five. You may need that hard pick and roll run to the rim guy. And Brooke did that at one point in his career. He did it a little bit last year, but at 37, guys, I don't know if that's a part of his game anymore, right? Like he's a stretch five. He's a 3-point shooting big. So like that, I guess like it's not just a salary dump type of situation for Brooke or get younger. It's like a, what's the fit now with Dame and with Giannis. So that's why Missy's interesting. And Ben kind of mentioned the wings, you know, Chris Middleton. It's funny, Ben, like how different these years go. Well, Chris was a third, was a junior when he came out.
Yeah.
Might've been a first round pick if not for the knee. Like, I don't know if you've got polished scorers like that anymore. Like Chris, it took him a little while to figure that out in the NBA, but everyone kind of knew Chris could get his shot at it. Right. And he was a second round pick. And I'm sure we'll see his highlights as a second round success story on day two of this, you know, telecast, whatever. But to Ben's point about seeing who's there at 23 and those wings, like you're projecting maybe that a Kaishaw George, for instance, could he develop a shot? Could he be his own shot creator in 3 years? I don't know. So yeah, but in terms of Lopez and the bigs, I think that's why you're maybe not seeing an emphasis on, oh, we need a stretch five in Milwaukee. I think it's more now with it's definitely the rim protection, but maybe more of a rim runner.
Yeah.
Dare I say Derek Lively type to fit with this current construct.
I'm looking at the 2013 draft, Giannis's draft that you mentioned is maybe the worst. And I mean, there's an argument after Giannis that Victor Oladipo is unquestionably the best player in this draft. Now it's probably Rudy Gobert who was taken 27th.
Oh, there's so much Rudy hate. It's Rudy. Rudy is definitely number two.
Yeah. It's Rudy. I'm sorry to Rudy. I apologize. You know, Rudy played 10 minutes a game his first year. Giannis, obviously we remember, was a project starting out. Now Rudy was really good in year two. So like, it's out there, but the Bucks are now, you know, any assets they add, I don't know how much long term. I mean, they have no draft picks until 2031. Like that is exclusively their own, and they're probably going to trade those too as we go down the line. So like, they don't have a future as it relates to what you're looking at for a project draft pick. Well, I don't know. I guess it depends on how you look at it. Ben, let's talk about the Marquette guys, and then we will come back to some Bucks issues, but. Tyler Kolek again is going to be in this period of the draft, potentially late first round. Ozo Iguodaro looks like probably not, although I'd be interested if you think as the Bucks get to number 33 relatively early in the second round, if you think Ozo could wind up being an option for them there. What is sort of, as you look at the Marquette guys, like what fits do you think would be best for them? Where do you expect them to go? I mean, what's rolling around your head as you look at the future here for Tyler Kolek and Ozo Iguodaro?
Yeah, it's just interesting thinking about Tyler Kolek the last couple of years when he's really exploded, really blossomed. I've always thought he was an NBA player just because of the way he reads the game. And, you know, he's so great at pick and rolls. That's obviously an NBA skill. He's probably the best passer in this draft class. That's a skill that translates to any level. I thought he would go undrafted 2 years ago when I was watching him play, and he would, you know, get in somebody's system, get in their G League team, work his way up to and have a successful NBA career that way. Then I thought last year he was going to be a second round pick. And it was like early in his senior season, last season, with Marquette, that I was thinking, oh, well, this guy, like he's a legitimate first round player. And now like it seems guaranteed he's going to be a first round pick. You know, we could say that's because of the weak draft class. But I think he's just going to be a competent point guard, a competent backup point guard for any team. Any team can need something like that. And as far as when he'll get drafted, it seems like he'll be at least in the top 25. I think like the Knicks at number 25 is probably his floor, and any team that needs a guard, and which for real, like in any NBA team is interested in a competent backup point guard. So any of those teams. So I think he's going to be a top 25 pick for sure, just because of his skills. And we could talk about his mental makeup, and I think that's really kind of separates him. He doesn't quite have the, you know, the physical attributes, which I think are a little overstated a little bit with him. He did have like a 35-inch vertical at the combine, which was bigger than I thought it was.
Yeah.
It was much higher than I thought it was going to be. And he's super strong. Like he's stronger than he looks like on the TV screen. He was a good rebounder for his size. But I think just his competitive makeup, and that's what I think is really interesting about Tyler. Like when he came out of high school, like he was at public school in Rhode Island, you know, getting over it. Like, he was just hoping for any kind of scholarship he can get. He bet on himself, went to a prep school, started getting low major offers, took the best one he could get at George Mason, coached by Dave Polson, Scotty guy, as we like to mention on the podcast.
We do.
Turned himself into the A-10 freshman of the year. His coach got fired. Dave Polson got fired. Shaka Smart picks him up in the transfer portal. I don't think even the Marquette coaches, they'll tell you this, they didn't even know quite what they had in him as like a pick and roll guy, because at George Mason, he was more of a scorer. They asked him to do more scoring. So like every step of the way, he's built himself up. And, you know, people could say like, okay, he's reached his ceiling. Like, the NBA is so much higher than where he is now. Like, he's going to hit a ceiling eventually, but I still think like that competitive nature is going to carry him through. It's carried him through every step of the way so far in his basketball career. So I think he's going to be a serviceable pro for like a decade.
And how about Ozo? What do you think of him?
Yeah, Ozo's it's quite an interesting case between those two guys, because Ozo's got clearly the physical talent. Like, you look at it, you know, if you walked in the gym with the Marquette team just like practicing down at the Al McGuire Center, you saw Ozo, like, yeah, that's the NBA guy right there. He's 6'11", you know, super athletic, can move really well. Thing with Ozo, he just can't shoot, you know. He just can't. He's taken 2 3-pointers in his Marquette career, missed both of them. Any shot outside of 3 feet, is he shooting like a funky floater from like the free throw line. But, you know, he can guard 5 positions. He can guard, you know, he can switch out of guards if he needs to. He's a super intelligent passer. You know, honestly, after Tyler, he might be the second best passer in the draft. Those skills, like I said, translate. I think as long as he lands with the right spot that can take advantage of his playmaking skills, you think like a Denver or like Sacramento, who like to use like playmakers at the center position or their big guys, those would be really good landing spots for him. And honestly, I think the shooting part is a little oversold with him. Like, no NBA team is going to say, okay, here, a second round pick, we need you to score, right? Like, he's going to get on the floor because of his defense, because of like his playmaking ability, and not just like screwing up. That's what they want out of their second round players. And he's such a smart player that I think like some team's going to take a chance on him somewhere. If, you know, it could be right around where the Bucks are in the 33 position. And he could be like a pretty good fit for this Bucks team as like a guy who played 4 years in college, who's, you know, built his body up, and he's not quite raw, but he's still got like several levels I think he can get to. And I think like talking to a lot of people, you know, the shooting, I think, could come around eventually. I know he's been working on it a lot. His free throw, you know, he's got some obvious touch if you look at his free throw numbers. But, you know, now that he's going to be in the NBA, he's going to be working on this. He's not going to class. He's going to devote himself fully to basketball. So I think that part can come along eventually. So I still think with Ozo, there's like several levels that he can still get to, despite being like a 4-year player in college.
Yeah,
Ozo sounds like a bigger Andre Jackson Jr. then.
Yeah, yeah. It's very, they're actually very similar players.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned the classwork. Ozo, tremendous academically. And
yeah,
so,
two degrees in 4 years. Yeah.
So very committed to that side of it, which obviously I would never want to make that look like it's a detriment, but you could see how there is some time freed up that he had to dedicate to, you know, the academic things that he was doing.
And with both those Marquette guys, like, if you're going to, like, you talk about, if you talk to scouts, they talk about betting on the human being, like betting on the person. Both those guys are like super competitive. They're not going to give you any trouble. You know, Tyler might mouth off in an interview, you know, he might drop some F-bombs, but that's about like as you know, bad as you're going to get with those guys. And they're all super competitive, and it shows. Like, both those guys were very overlooked as recruits. Like, they were, you know, lower than top 100 recruits in their class. So like, to be even in this conversation as like NBA draft picks 4 years later, that kind of speaks to their growth mindset.
Tyler Cole, like, lord of content. If you are with the Bucks, continue to do what you do in press conferences. It is, it's wonderful.
I can't believe I just said growth mindset. Shaka Smart is like seeping into my brain. Like, all his talking points are like in my brain now.
Yeah, he's got you. He's got you in his thrall, Ben. Jim, so let's pivot back to the Bucks. The Boston Celtics won the NBA championship. They did so convincingly. They had just a tremendously charmed path to the title as far as injuries and opponents that they drew, but they dominated. They lost three games in the entire playoffs. Wouldn't have even been enough to lose a playoff series, let alone any of the four that they play. You know, they played four of them and end up triumphing. The Bucks, I think even if they're at full strength, I think it'd be worth asking if the Bucks can rise to that level, can beat a team like the Boston Celtics going forward. I know you think they can, or at least based on our conversations of the past, you definitely think they can. You know, we could get into some of the Drew discourse again if we want, even though I think we've kind of discussed that to some degree. Mm-hmm. But so even after seeing what Boston was able to do to the rest of the Eastern Conference and then the Dallas Mavericks, do you still feel comfortable thinking, you know, if this Bucks team is fully healthy, if Giannis is healthy, if he gets that extra time with Dame and with Doc, that this is a team that can again contend for the title, even if Boston is back to the same level again?
Yeah. I mean, look, they drew, and this is, you know, like they tried to win that last game in Orlando, but their seeding was lost when Giannis was healthy, and they dropped all those games, the crappy Washington and crappy Atlanta. And whatever, they drew the one matchup in the East that was the worst one for them. It was Indiana. And then I still think if Dame and Chris don't get hurt and if Bobby doesn't get ejected, you know, this is all different. But that's not what happened. They did get hurt. Bobby did get ejected. And here we are. But no, they are if this run, look, the Celtics will give them their credit. They won, 80 games. They dominated. Kudos to them. Drew Holiday probably punched his ticket for the Hall of Fame. And another gold medal this summer will probably do that, if not already.
Saucy, by the way. That's a spicy take. You said that to me, and you're very confident in that. And I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah, I think so. Look, Bobby Dandridge is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
There were no Olympic, you know, pro Olympics teams back then, but he won two rings with two teams, and he's getting a Boston bump. If people thought, you know, whatever his role was in Milwaukee, he shows up in two cities. They're his first year, and they win. Yeah. So, but now to the broader conversation, like the Celtics were deep, and they were able to withstand the Porzingis injury. I think some of what helped them were the injuries to the other teams. The Celtics don't have much for big teams. Maybe this calculus changes if Brook Lopez is traded and the Bucks are a smaller group. But as currently constructed, as we record this, the Celtics struggle against bigger teams. And they have no answer for Giannis. You know, they could throw different bodies at Dame, but they don't. I mean, Chris is going to get his as well, just as much as maybe Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum might get there. So the Bucks, look, this draft and this draft week isn't really so much about selecting these rookie players. It's more about their setup for free agency, which begins in earnest on June 30th, a couple of days after, guys. So, you know, if they decide to keep their picks because they're like, look, we need to keep these picks for four years down the road, 5 years down the road. We need roster young guys to develop. That would make sense. That means they only have three roster spots to sign veteran free agents with. So that means you have to hit on those three. You can't miss like Rodney Hood. You can't miss like, you know, Semi Ojeleye. You have to hit like Pat Connaughton, like Bobby Portis, to a degree, Malik Beasley. Like it really, you know, narrows that pool of people you can sign for veteran minimum deals. That's all they can do. So, yeah, they can definitely, if healthy, guys, that's my opinion. I just feel like they're set up for that. But it's just how do you get there? They haven't been healthy for many, many years now in the playoffs. Even their championship run, they suffered injury. They were just deep enough to handle it when it occurred. And so that's up to John Horst and his staff to make sure they are deep enough with either three free agent signings and two rookies or a trade and a couple signings and a rookie to withstand any bumps and bruises that invariably will come their way.
Jim, I'm just thinking about this as you're talking. Can you explain to me how Thanasis works right now with him being injured and possibly out for the year? Do they not have to roster him? Do they, like, how does he figure into the whole template of the whole financial thing?
Yeah, this is interesting. So Thanasis ruptured an Achilles while he was getting an open gym run in after the season. He's still under contract with the Bucks when that happened. The league year is in July. So being as he was a member of the Milwaukee Bucks, he is allowed to, even though he'll become a free agent on you know July 8th, whatever day that is, he will be allowed to rehabilitate at the Bucks practice facility. He was an employee, a member of the team when he was hurt. He is allowed to maintain that care, you know, until he can go. And that's not a Thanasis thing. That's if he was a member of any team, he could do that. As long as the team and player were cool with that. In this case, I would imagine both are cool with that. Here's the interesting thing. So if he was Ben Steele, who ruptured an Achilles as a member of the Bucks working out, in that case, like the team goes on the road, Ben could not jump on the plane and go to the 10-day road trip because he is not technically a member of the team.
Sure.
He couldn't sit on the bench at home. He's not a member of the team. However, family members often travel with the team. Wives, girlfriends, cousins, brothers, parents. So Thanasis Adetokounmpo, the brother, could fly on the team plane to road trips and stay with his brother and be around the team. Couldn't sit on the bench. Couldn't be in any of those sort of team scenarios, but like he could be in the locker room just as a kid or, but like that's allowed in the NBA. So that's interesting. I've checked around the league with this. All of that is above board. None of that is like a cap circumvention issue. Although enough people that I've spoken to have said, if that's what plays out, other teams would be paying attention to that. And they said they wonder how long that might go before other teams are like, wait a minute. Like, how is this dude being able to, like, travel with the team and go to road games? Now, that's, like, two steps ahead. But in terms of just Thanasis, no, they don't have to, like, sign him to a veteran deal and use up the 15th roster spot. To keep him around. He can rehabilitate and work out. I just don't think he could participate in like team activities, but honestly with the blown Achilles guys, I don't know when that would even be possible to happen anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm sure once down the line, he's clear to resume, you know, like, oh, you are now like able to do court work. I'm sure they can find non Bucks, like whatever issues there. And just real quick for fans, no, they're not going to hire him as a coach. Thanasis Adetokounmpo is a basketball player. He has not expressed any desire to retire. So no, there are no, I mean, no, Doc Rivers is hiring his coaching staff and Thanasis is not going to be part of that, at least for the foreseeable future.
Ben, let's,
Bucks already have like 11 assistant coaches. They don't need another one.
Right. That's true. Ben, I want to talk about one of those assistant coaches because I know obviously you do a lot of Bucks stuff as well. You've gotten to know Darvin Ham over the years, the former Lakers coach. By the way, as we're recording this, it was reported that the Lakers have in fact hired JJ Redick. So that's going to be interesting. Shocker. But Darvin Ham is back, reportedly at the behest of Giannis, which makes sense. Darvin Ham was a good part of the championship team that, in 2021. Seemed to have kind of an ill-fated run with the Lakers, but from what you know of Darvin Ham, what's sort of his specialty? What is the thing that he brings to the table? And, what do you think about him being back?
Yeah, I mean, he's a beloved figure by fans. He's a beloved figure by players, most importantly, on his team. I think he brings like a very high level of accountability with players. Like he can get away with telling players in a way that maybe a coach who didn't play in the NBA, he can push players that way with criticism that is respected by players. And now he's got, some head coaching experience under his belt. maybe not the most ideal situation for him in LA with that team, but he got some experience as a head coach. And that always helps on your staff. Doc Rivers has a couple of ex-head coaches on his roster. Dave Yeager is still hanging around, although his name's circulating a little bit in the coaching hiring circles. Darvin Ham, anytime you can bring back a beloved player and a beloved coach, it's always a win in the PR department, in the basketball department, whatever department you want to call it, it's a win.
Yeah, for sure. Before I let you guys go, I want to get your just maybe one or two questions that you really feel like are that you maybe don't have an answer to that you're really fascinated to see unfold as we get into the final stretch of June here, the draft and the free agency starting. Maybe it's a name or two that really pops up as an actual legitimate possibility for the Bucks. Ben, I'll start with you. Then I'll go with Jim. What as you look at this Bucks team, what is still the thing that you want to know or the thing that you don't have that really fascinates you in the next week or two?
Yeah, I just, like Jim said, I don't want to cover the same ground, but I'm just fascinated on like what kind of deals they can work together. I mean, what kind of, if they can package this pick in any kind of way, just that's what I'm interested in. I don't think any player that the Bucks are going to add at 23, 24 is going to, help their team next year just with this draft. So I'm just interested in any kind of moves they can make.
All right, Jim, how about you?
Yeah, I look, media starts with me. And so I would love to cover a Tyler Kolek press conference in Milwaukee, and have a guy like that around. It sounds like he won't be there at 23. It seems like maybe there's some family ties with his agency and the front office of Phoenix, one pick before. At 22, that maybe Tyler Kolek is passing the ball to Kevin Durant, but I'd like that just in the sense of a more broadly though, a more ready-made draft pick. Like Andre Jackson was sort of a ready-made defender to a degree. He fouled a lot, and then he had to come off the court. They're still waiting on Marjon Beauchamp. I get the idea of at 23, let's swing for the fences. Let's find the guy with all the measurables that are amazing, and maybe it'll be great. History says that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, and that's like, going back to whenever, all the 23 picks of all time. I mean, so I would personally go with the 3 to 4 year player who you're like, you know what? This person can do this thing in the NBA for us right now. That's where I would, that's the type of player, I guess, I'd like to see them pick. But to Ben's point, they are so hamstrung by decision, by their own choice. I'd be fascinated to see if they do try to reshape the roster in some degree, but just to keep it to the draft. If they pick, that's the type of pick I'd like to see. And yeah, we'll take a Tyler Kolek F-bomb in the press conference and and see what happens there. I'm good with that.
Similar to when Ricky Weeks was named associate manager, a little LFG, if you know the abbreviation. That's maybe we can get a similar thing out of Tyler Kolek. He is Jim Ozarski. The other guy is Ben Steele. They, of course, join me every so often here on the Point Forward podcast. We will be back again to recap the draft, probably as well as free agency. So you'll probably hear from us again in early July as we recap kind of what should be an somewhat refashioned, although pretty much the same roster for the Milwaukee Bucks. Probably won't be too exciting, but we'll see what we have here when July kicks in. Gentlemen, really appreciate you joining me today. We'll talk to you again very soon.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.